Accession number 23153, reel 2.
It went down, out of sight. We then proceeded on our way. Now, I have no recollection of that whatever.
Yes.
And I ought to have remembered something like that, oughtn't I?
Yes. Do you think there could have been some error with your brother?
He had the right server, but he certainly got the wrong pilot.
Yes, because, you see, your brother was with you, wasn't he?
Yes.
At that time.
Yes. He was mostly flying with de Crespigny, I think.
Yes. And
observatory.
I just wondered that many people I've spoken to seem to get you two mixed up, you see, because that you flew in the same squadron, you both got the same name. You see, it's quite easy, isn't it, to think.
Yeah.
Now, what I'd really like to know is, you know, what did you think of the Vickers fighter as an aeroplane compared to other aeroplanes that you've flown?
The what?
The Vickers fighter.
Well, it was a very heavy sort of machine to push around. The DH2, of course, is a great change.
Yes.
And I noticed I put in one of these things that I find. He asked me, what did you think of the DH2? And I said, I thought it was a very easy machine to fly.
Yes.
Which is very different to somebody else's description of it.
Yes, that's true, yes.
But anyway, things like that. But, of course, it never went according to instructions at 100 miles an hour. Never
in this world.
Unless they went on the seashore, one foot from the ground, with the engine full on, they couldn't get it. And I don't think they'd get it then, unless the wind was well behind them.
Yes. Now, the Vickers fighter had the same engine as the DH2.
Exactly.
Now, you had a lot of trouble with the engines, didn't you, the Monster Pappy?
Not so much in 11 Squadron.
No.
Not so much.
Why not?
Because I have a very poor idea of the people at the base somewhere. I think they were larking about, not attending to duty properly.
Yeah.
They'd get these engines, and they had to be exactly right. 9 cylinders, you see. Now, if you got put them in any... Oh, where's a cylinder for this end? Here's another one. You stuck them in like that. You'd have rough engine, you see.
Yes.
It had to be beautifully balanced.
Yes.
And they didn't bother. And you couldn't do much about it in the squadron. You could try and change them around and do things like that. But there was... I think the French Monster Pappy, as it originally was a good one.
Yes.
Properly built. But it used to be built in England.
Yes, by...
Peter Hooker at Walthamstow. I went there, you see.
Yes. You went there when you was in 11 Squadron, or...?
In
24.
No, in 11 Squadron.
Yes.
11 Squadron. Most of the pilots were sent there for a week.
Yes.
And Dawes, who was a suspicious bird, said, I want a telegram from you every day from the place to prove that you're there, you see.
Why didn't you go to the French manufacturers in Paris? Surely that would have been closer.
Why
didn't you go to the French manufacturers of the engine?
For the engines?
Yeah, well, no, the French, I think Seguin brothers made the engine, didn't they, in France,
yes,
in Paris.
Yes, which is Nome and Lerone, they call themselves, all sorts of things like that.
Yes.
But that didn't come under my competence, you see.
No.
Or any pilot. He had to take what he was given, that's all. There was no nonsense about that.
Yeah.
You couldn't say, I don't like this engine, give me another. No. It wouldn't come off.
I think, really, do you think the mechanics were better in 11 Squadron than they were later on in 24 Squadron? Do you think they could cope with engine troubles better?
Well, I've also written somewhere in this that I've never been in an RAFC squadron or RAF squadron where the mechanics weren't marvellous. They were on the floor, pretty safe, but they felt that, I think.
Yes.
And they looked after you. Some, of course, were better than others, like everybody else, but...
there's... there's some other things here I've got mentioned here, actions or incidents, you know, that you can recall. Remember the Loos, Battle of Loos, in the summer of 1915. There was a lot of activity then with the 11th Squadron, wasn't there?
One squadron, one flight went.
Yes.
The man you mentioned just now, Branca.
Branca, yes.
He said there's going to be a great change in everything. Well, it was. There wasn't, in point of fact. Loos was a dead failure, you remember?
Yes.
Utter failure. But I think Insull and de Crepigny went to that.
Yes, they were in B flight with Playfair. Captain
That's
Playfair.
It. That's right.
Yes.
Playfair's still alive.
Is he?
She's going to jump up. It's her privilege, that storm, you see. She's getting terribly fussed. You see?
But it's got to be. He'll have to fuss in a bedroom or somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can put it on that little table there.
This one?
Right? Yes,
yes, that'll be
So
better.
I'll just turn that off. Yes. Now that's.
I'd love to hear this again.
This is Playfair. This is.
Playfair
is. Captain Playfair.
Yes.
And the squadron.
I saw his birthday in the Times the other day.
Did you?
You know, the list of. I sometimes look at it.
I don't think I'll have time
to. I think he's an air marshal or something like that. He's well up. But he was B flight, that's right.
They were sent to
Auxerre,
weren't they? Up near Lens, B flight. Whereas the rest of the squadron was sent down to Villers-Bretonneux.
Yes. I think Loos, by the time of Loos, I think the squadron had gone to Bertin. We left Villers-Bretonneux. We were only there for about a month or a few weeks.
I see. So what time were you at Bertin? That would be...
I can tell you from this thing. You were asking about the first flights or something.
Well, I'd like to have a bit more information about, incidents that happened, during your time with the 11th Squadron, with the Vickers fighter, anything you can recall. You know, when you first met the Fokkers, I remember you telling me before, when you first met the Fokkers, the way they used to attack.
I saw Vickers. I don't think they cared for the sucker. It didn't look nice. It frightened them. It was poor old Vickers who only went along at 60 miles an hour, you see.
Yes.
Fokkers were much faster than that. And they were firing through the propeller, weren't they?
Yes.
But of course, the Vickers also had nothing in front of it at all. No propeller. That was the advantage of that and the DH-2. Wonderful view.
But how did the Fokkers normally attack?
Attacking a DH-2 or a...
No, attacking
Vickers.
You, attacking you and a Vickers fighter.
Vickers?
Well, I mean, I remember you recalled earlier on that they used to do this sort of rather deflecting sort of attack, come in and fire and then turn away quickly.
Yes. I can't remember.
Specifically that day, because of the day before.
Yes.
When you went out.
This is the 7th of November. He got the job.
And what happened on the 6th of November?
Well, I described it to you just now.
I know, but I didn't tape that. I said to you when you were talking that I'd like to hear that again, because we want it on the tape, you see. But,
Is it working now?
It's working, yes.
6th of November 1915, Major Dawes told me that I was to go and find a German aerodrome near what was it?
The Vacon.
No. Cambrai.
Cambrai. Yeah, Cambrai, yes.
It was somewhere in a 50-mile radius from Cambrai, north of Cambrai. Robinson was my observer and gunner, and we set off the afternoon of this, the 7th, 6th of November, about 15 miles from the lines on the German side. We met a German machine, what type I couldn't say, but it was a two-seater, and we revolved round each other for some little time without either being able to get our guns on target. So I decided to make a very, very quick turn indeed. I think the quickest a Vickers ever made. And informed my observer that I was going to do so. And he afterwards told me he thought I'd thrown him out, but he just managed to keep in. I said, "You've just about got 1 second to beat the other fellow, so have your gun handy." This he did, and we just managed to get in some bullets when he went down. We then proceeded on our way and found the aerodrome, German aerodrome, within another 15 miles. It took about 20 minutes for the observer to note the various roads and so on and pinpoint it. We then started to return. It was getting late, night was coming on, and that we were followed by a timid aircraft, a German aircraft, and he fired from long distance in the hopes of hitting us. This got rather annoying, so I turned the machine round and dived towards him, and he immediately turned tail. This happened several times, and eventually he didn't come anymore. But I just noticed an unpleasant feature was the oil tank, which was situated on the top of the under the top of the wing, and top under the wing, had come loose. A bullet had hit the fastening. And that, I knew it was shaking about, and I knew that that was supplying the oil to the engine. If it broke, we were prisoners. But fortunately, nothing so undesired came about. And we made, just as dusk was falling, we made the aerodrome.
You said that they had that as a tank, an oil pipe going from the tank?
A very thin oil pipe.
And it sort of ran along the nacelle, or...?
Yes, somehow. It ended up in the engine anyhow.
Yes, I see.
It was castor oil.
Yes.
That they used.
Yes.
Into the engine and out through the cylinder valve. That's it.
That's it. And then what about your MC?
Oh, I'm not going to worry about that.
Oh, I thought that was very interesting, actually, that part.
Well, there's no point in it, really, you see, now.
No, but I thought it was interesting because of the point that when the squadron had got a certain number of decorations, no matter how meritorious a certain actor had been, there wouldn't be any more decorations because the squadron had enough decorations.
Yes.
You know,
all I remember of that thing is that when I went up to the squadron the next day, I met Reese. Captain Reese, he was, you see.
Yes.
And he'd been given an MC some weeks before for a job done.
Yeah.
And what he said to me was this. He said, "That is a much better job than mine."
Yeah. Now, got down here that remember it uses the Insel VC.
Yes.
Didn't get on very well with
dogs. Yes.
Do you remember what that was all about?
Oh no. He simply didn't like him.
Why was that? Any particular reason?
No, I can't think of any particular reason, but they didn't get on. Until he did this job. Then he was mother's baby boy, sort of, isn't it?
Yes, I see. Yes.
And he was racing about the place to get this VC French. He got reports from them and reports all over the place, you see. And it made a very good story. In my opinion, it was worth an MC.
Yeah.
What did he do? I was in the office when this message was coming in, actually in the squadron office, and he was cursing himself up hill and down dale because he hadn't arrived back at the squadron. You see, what the hell's the fella doing now? That sort of stuff. And then came the message that Donald, who was my engine driver, and asked me originally to enable him to go and do something up in the air as well.
That's your observer, wasn't it? Is
that yours, manager?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
I found it on the hall table. Why, my poor glasses house looks so small for you. Is it really yours?
Yes, it's mine.
Well, where's the other one?
That's all right. Well, the other's in your pocket, isn't it?
Must be. Yes, I should be.
Look and see.
I just suddenly saw that one plum on the table and I looked on it. Don't recognise it as mine. I've got a pair of large brown ones.
Anyway, you were saying that.
I was interested. It was some weeks, I suppose, before the announcement was made, because I was already in 24 Squadron.
Yeah.
And I remember a chap called Captain Atkins, and he was otherwise known as Kipper Atkins. I don't know whether he's still alive. But he was very pleased. He said, another VC for the RFC business, you see.
Yeah. But what you were saying that about Dawes and Insel, that you heard the telephone.
Yes. The telephone rang and he picked it up and he started to blaspheme until Insel got it into his head to tell him that he said, we've shot down a German aircraft, French lines. And then he proceeded to describe how they were practically followed him down to the ground. The two men inside bunked for the side of the, because they started to shoot him up, you see. The men disappeared into the hedge at the back of the field or something. So they dropped, what's his name? The observer dropped a small bomb, a little bomb, about as big as your fist. But it fell apparently on the machine and set it alight. Smoke and so on came up. Then Insel discovered that he was practically on the floor. It was getting dark, and he hadn't any petrol left to speak of. He couldn't get upstairs once more. So he decided, shouted to Donald, and said, look, we'll hedgehop over the trenches and trust to luck. The luck didn't hold because a bullet went from the trench, from the German side, of course, went through the petrol tank. Well, when that happens, with a monosopan, which is pressure fed, you see, goodbye. The engine's gone. And he could just land in a field on the other side. Whereupon the Germans started chucking shells across, you see. But it got too dark for that. Insel and Donald went to bunk for the hedges like these friends on the other side and watched the bombardment, but it didn't hit the machine at all. And darkness supervened. Now, Insel was educated in Paris, born there and lived there. His father was something or other there. Anyway, he spoke French like a native. He went down and saw the colonel commanding that part of the French line. And of course, when he saw that this fellow really did understand French, what he wanted was, I'm the aeroplane pilot. I want to let my squadron know because the tanks busted. And he gave him every assistance. And that's the voice I heard coming through, you see, or rather, Dawes coming through, telling him all about it. So Dawes was highly excited. He yelled for Rees, who came along, and he said, take a tender, put in a new tank, all the appliances and petrol and everything else that you want, and some mechanics to run the show. And he said, I need to tell you now. I'll tell you where he is. He's pinpointed him. He says, on the French line, something, some 15 miles away, I suppose. He then, Rees, who was very good indeed at anything of that kind, he, first class man, okay. He went and took his, took all the apparatus necessary, and under mask lights, that was a good word in that story, they repaired the, took out the old tank, put in the new one, filled it up, and got it generally ready to start. And then Insel got in and flew it away at dawn. That's how the citation ended, you see. Well, they made a good thing out of it, but it wasn't a VC job, in my opinion. It was very ordinary, shooting down of a machine and escaping over the thing. But what he did, now I should have reversed it. What he did in escaping from Germany, it was a VC job, in my opinion. The other one was an MC job. But he got them both, but the wrong way around.
Yes, I think you mean, yes. Yes, I remember you telling me about that, wrapping yourself with wild garlic.
That's right.
Just to put the dog off the scent.
Yes. But the whole, he told me the whole story one day at Dover when I was command there. But I always thought that was an extraordinary job.
That reminds me, talking on those lines, of that marvellous book you've got of escape.
Oh, that, up there, yes.
You ought to read that if you haven't read it. What's it called, Robin?
The Holtzman.
But that's the Second World War.
Yes, I know, but that's a story. It's a wonderful...
Our present Chancellor is all over that book.
Oh, yes.
It's a
Barber, isn't it?
Barber, yes. He was a Spitfire pilot and shot down.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story.
But the fellow that wrote it, he really did escape after about, I don't know how many tries, in the most ingenious ways.
It's fascinating reading.
Yes, there he is.
Now there was...
Well, that's too modern for you.
Yes, that's too modern for me, yes. I'm not particularly interested in that.
Well, I mean, to relax. You've got to relax sometime.
I never
in
relax.
In this world.
I've got plenty of other things to do. I think television's the worst thing for me.
Oh, well, it's generally very bad.
It's very bad for doing things because you get rather captivated by television.
You get glued to it.
And I think, I must get on with my articles, you see. And then I think, oh, I'll just watch this and I'll go.
Yes.
And then I watch the next thing.
Oh, there's only one thing to do, and that is to remove the TV.
Oh, I know, this is terrible, yes. But anyway, there was one person we didn't really talk very much about, and that was Champion de Crespigny.
Who I didn't talk about.
Yes, but we didn't mention him. You mentioned him in passing, but he was with you right from the very early times at Brooklands, wasn't he?
Yes. He was at the same time as Insel mentions there.
Yes. But he was quite a youngster, wasn't he?
Yes, he was about 17.
Apparently, he was the youngest commander in the RAF later on, wasn't he?
He was, yes.
I forget which squadron he
was. The youngest group captain, I think, or something.
Yes. He was a very young man.
Yeah. But he didn't stay on after he'd got to Air Vice Marshal, that is it.
No. Can you remember anything about him at all in the 11th Squadron? I knew he flew with your brother quite a bit, or your brother
yes.
was his observer.
He was my brother's observer for a while. I went and learnt flying under his command somewhere in England.
Yeah.
Julie, I think it was.
Yeah.
But I didn't see a great deal of him after 11th Squadron.
Yes,
he was
in
all over the place.
He was a commander of was it 63 Squadron? Was it Camels?
No, I was.
You were in charge of 63. Yeah. That was training squadron, though, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Wasn't he in charge?
Joyce Green.
Yes, he was in charge of a camel squadron in France, wasn't he?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But as I say, I only saw him in the club and that sort of thing from time to time.
Now, there was another thing which I remember you mentioned last time I saw you. This German aircraft, Two Tails.
Oh, yes. But that was one of these long reconnaissance jobs. I happened to have a very bad observer on that occasion. Lent me. In fact, it was nothing to do with sea flight I was in. Dawes came up to me with this rather smarmy countenance and said, look, all their machines and whatever flight it was gone fucked this afternoon, and I've got an important reconnaissance I want done. So I'd like you to go and do it. Now, then he said, but I can let you have the observer, you see, that would be doing it if all the rest of it was all right. And what I should have said was, I'll have one of my own if you don't mind, sir. You see, somebody I know, I don't like strange observers. And I didn't care for this chap anyway. I thought he was a dud. He proved to be completely dud. That's a very uncomfortable position, but because this fellow was a captain,
yes,
observer. It doesn't matter whether he was a general. Pilot is the boss, absolutely, in an aeroplane. So, that didn't worry me. But it was a cloudy day. At 6,000 feet, we ran into cloud. We had to go to a place called, in France, called H-A-M, Ham, I suppose they call it. But I always called it Ham. Finish with it. That was the first. Ham, St. Quentin. And
I want to know what the correct pronunciation in French is.
I never heard it.
Bertangles.
That's all right. But at any rate, to carry on the story, I gave him the route and so on, and he knew what he had to do. I got up to 6,000 feet, which probably took half an hour, and we were crossing the lines when I got a note passed through on a slate, or something like that. Let's hot staff Ham, you see. I said, what's that? Let's hot stuff Ham, go somewhere else. Too cloudy, or something. So I thought, oh, it's like that, is it? I paid no attention and went straight to Ham, where there was an aerodrome, you see. And on the aerodrome were machines floating about. And after I'd flown round about it two or three times, I noticed one of them was taking off and came spiraling up, you see. And obviously it was going to pay attention to us. That was the idea, anyway. Now, I had a back door entrance, you see, cloud, 6,000 feet, thick cloud. All I had to do was to slop into it, which I did, when the machine had got up very nearly to the height that I had been. See. I said, I'll lose you, Mr. Man, and come out suddenly when you don't know it. And I yelled at the observer, come out shooting. And it's true enough, I came out right alongside this bloke from downstairs, you see. He fired some shots at it, but he didn't like it at all, and he went straight on down. I don't think I don't mean he crashed, I mean he just went, he didn't like it.
That was a two-tail machine, wasn't it? That was one of these German two-tail machines, was it?
No, it wasn't. No. It was just some ordinary machine, LVG or something.
Yes.
I then proceeded on my way to St. Quentin, noticing the engines puffing along. They always like that information. How many trains did you see going this way or that way?
Were they photographed or was this just visual?
That was... No, this is description. He hadn't got a camera with him.
Yeah.
and so on to some other place, I forget now what. Now we come to the two-tailed story, leaving St. Quentin and going home, because we'd been up over 3 hours and the thing didn't hold out much longer after that. When I saw, coming from, we were about 15 miles from either way, St. Quentin and the Lions, you see.
Yeah.
This machine had two tails, two fuselages, two engines. Never seen one before. In fact, I don't think I'd ever heard of. And it was coming along, straight along like this, and I was coming in this direction, you see. So I simply turned slightly, so as to let him cross the T, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I said, get on with it, shoot. And he fired away. But the thing didn't take any interest in anything. Went on towards St. Quentin. Well, that was the end of Two Tails, as far as I'm concerned. But we were much interested in the fact that it did have these twin fuselages.
Yes, there were quite a few rumours going around at the time that it had a whole armoury on board.
Yeah.
And that everyone was rather wary about approaching it.
Yes. Well, we approached it all right, but he didn't hit it.
Now, I remember another thing you related to me.
I reported the whole incident to Darley when I got down. I said, this fella's no good, you know.
Yeah.
I said, I told him. So we got rid of him.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened to him.
I see.
But I didn't like it at all.
No.
You can imagine how uncomfortable we're having somebody who
was... Was the observer in charge of navigation as well? Normally that was so, wasn't it?
Well, he would be, yes.
So, I mean, but you had to rely on your own navigation.
Oh, yes.
This chap.
I did run, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. But I mean, from what Insull says in his book, the observer actually did all the navigating as such.
Yes.
Now, there was one other thing you brought up. You related how, when you were at Netheravon,